Hey guys, Jason Agnew here. Welcome to the free version of Sunday Night's Main Event. Appreciate you downloading the show. Now, this is normally where I'd mention the Patreon, but since you're a loyal listener, you already know about our Patreon at patreon.com/SNMEradio. There's a lot of good stuff there, so you can sign up if you like. It's only a dollar a week. Along with that, though, I know you're enjoying the free version of the show, and that's cool. Really appreciate it. There's lots of good stuff to come on today's show, but I would just ask you one itsy-bitsy favor for this free content, and that is rate it. If you could just give the show a rating in your podcatcher on iTunes, it helps the show grow and other people know about it. So it'd be super cool. I'll now do my impression of the weird Uber driver that you once had as you're getting out, where they just kind of go, 5 stars? Sure, that'd be great. So rate the show, and more importantly, enjoy the show. Here we go.
And all of these neurologists, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this. You are cleared.
This is Sunday night's main event.
In clear violation of the law.
With Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone and I can be louder than each and every one of you.
On TSN Radio.
I'm not finished with you!
A week away from Survivor Series, AEW welcomes back Pac and looks ahead to Shaq. And WWE says goodbye to Zelina Vega, but may have picked a fight with Andrew Yang. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sunday night's main event, coming at you across Canada on TSN Radio. Jason Agnew back here with you to cap off your week with a look in and around the squared circle. And this week, much of that conversation will probably be outside the ring, as WWE and Vince McMahon have made what may be a major misstep in their continuing battle with third-party social media. We're going to dive into that situation when I'm joined later this hour by Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. In the second hour of the show, we'll keep with in-ring and storylines as one of the co-hosts of All Elite Weekly, Joe Aguinaldo, will join me to look back at this week's AEW and WWE TV. And believe it or not, Joe claims he has something positive to say about this week's Raw. We've also got a Jeopardy-style version of Turnbuckle Trivia to award one of our patrons a t-shirt from our t-shirt providers at ballergear.ca. Plus your chance to win a $25 gift card for Pizzaville just for sending out a tweet. All of this is to come throughout tonight's show, but first things first, let's get you up to date on a very interesting week of wrestling news.
And now, your wrestling roundup on Sunday night's main event.
Our top story of the week is that Zelina Vega, real name Thea Trinidad Budgen, is no longer with WWE. WWE announced Friday afternoon that they've come to terms on the release of Vega in one of their typical Future Endeavor-style announcements. This came as a surprise to many, but when you peel back the layers, there's a lot more going on here than just a simple release. Now, Zelina has been one of the most vocal talents against the WWE crackdown on third-party social media streams. She is an extremely active personality on Twitch and is believed to have been one of the parties that met with WWE management about this issue over the past couple months. Now, moments before Vega's release was officially announced on WWE.com, she tweeted, quote, "I support unionization," end quote. This is a bit of a follow-up to a tweet from last month where Vega responded to a tweet from Paige about unionization with a thinking face emoji and a hmm. Vega and Paige are both prominent Twitch streamers who would be affected by WWE's recent Twitch edict and crackdown on third-party deals. Paige tweeted about Vega's release, "This sucks." Oh, Paige. Vega also recently launched an OnlyFans account featuring cosplay photos with a no nudity policy. Now, keep in mind, Zelina Vega is married to Aleister Black, so this will undoubtedly affect his standing in the company as well. And this also looks to play into the recent public statements made by American politician Andrew Yang about the classification of WWE talent as independent contractors as opposed to employees. We're going to talk to Dave Meltzer about this in the next segment of the show, because with Joe Biden winning last week's U.S. election, the firing of Zelina may have just been Vince McMahon knocking down that first domino. But we shall see. The bad luck continues for Chelsea Green. After making her SmackDown debut in a four-way match, you may have noticed that she seemed to disappear after taking a bump to the outside of the ring. Well, that was because she broke her arm. In a post on Instagram after SmackDown, Green announced that she broke her arm in tonight's match. Quote, just another twist in my at WWE story tonight. If you wondered where I went after my entrance, here's your answer. Another broken arm. Nothing I haven't dealt with before. I'll be back before you know it. End quote. And one more note on the WWE Women's Division. The company is doing a Chronicle Network show on Lana, building to Survivor Series, which probably goes along with my prediction of Lana coming out as the winner of the traditional Survivor Series women's match next weekend. AEW had a big video game announcement on Tuesday of this week. Three games were announced, one for consoles and two for mobile. The presentation was done in a parody style of an Apple press conference with all participating wearing Steve Jobs-style black turtlenecks. Kenny Omega showcased an early trailer of the console game, which will be available on current and next generation consoles, and it was also announced that Yuke's would be developing the game, with Hideyuki Awashita being involved in the project. Now, Awashita was the director of the Nintendo 64 game WWF No Mercy, as well as the Def Jam series of games. The two mobile games will be AEW Elite General Manager, a sports management / general manager sim where you run aspects of the AEW promotion. This game is still in development and no release date was established. And finally, their last mobile game is a casino-style game that will come out by the end of the year called AEW Casino Double or Nothing, where you'll be able to compete in tournaments, play against the casino, and create offline tournaments. Okay, moving along now to AEW In the Ring. In a storyline I still don't understand, AEW announced that NWA Women's Champion Serena Deeb will defend her title against Thunder Rosa on Wednesday's episode of Dynamite. As for their own women's title, well, they really seem to adopt a less is more mentality as we continue to care less until we see it more. We do, however, have a new woman in the AEW Women's Division. After her debut cutting a promo on Cody Rhodes and announcing Shaq on AEW Dynamite this week, Jade Cargill has been signed to a multi-year contract. Cargill is 28 years of age, played basketball for Jacksonville State University, and is a fitness model who offers diet and exercise subscription plans on her website, in addition to having a master's degree in child psychology. Cargill was part of a trial camp at the WWE Performance Center in April of 2019. That is according to WWE.com. In WWE signing news, Alex Zane has signed a deal with the company. Zane is an independent wrestler and Kentucky native. He's worked constantly in the past few years and has appearances for both Impact Wrestling and Ring of Honor under his belt. It's expected he will report to the WWE Performance Center as part of their next class, along with another recent signee, Ben Carter. It also looks like the tag team The Rascals of Impact Wrestling, that's Zachary Wentz and Trey Miguel, will also be headed to the WWE. But that one is not official as of yet. Speaking of Impact, for those of you that missed last night's Turning Point show, which I'm thinking is everyone aside from Bob Kapoor, and even he didn't have great things to say about it. There were, however, two title changes to keep you updated on. Fresh off their Talking Shop-a-Mania 2 show on Friday night, the Good Brothers, Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows, won the Impact Tag Team titles, defeating The North following a magic killer on Ethan Page. The North only held the titles for 21 days, regaining the titles in a fatal four-way match on Impact that also involved Ace Austin and Madman Fulton and the Good Brothers. This marks the first time both Gallows and Anderson have won the tag team titles together. And Deonna Purrazzo regained the Knockouts title, defeating Sue Young to win the championship for the second time. That wraps up the week in wrestling news, but looking at our top story, it was a big one, and we're going to dive back and focus on that in the next segment when we chat with the returning Dave Meltzer. Dave was not on the show last week because he was filming, all I was told was a documentary. Turns out he was filming for Dark Side of the Ring. We'll chat with him about that as well as all the news of the week and get a little bit more in depth. Coming up next, you are listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. Take it on
the other side. Here in Canada, we have several regionally specific phrases that arise when said vernacular is considered appropriate, i.e., the funny-sounding term, shinny. Shinny is a game of ice hockey played without the standard head-to-toe body armor. Instead, only skates, gloves, a hockey stick, and preferably a helmet is worn. And if you're Mike Lackey, GLB's brewmaster, you wear the same pair of shinny pants day in and day out from December until March. A common code of ethics is employed during a game of shinny. For example, raising the puck off the ice is strongly discouraged for fear of being struck in the shins or worse, elsewhere. However, the most common practice takes place off the sheet of ice. Mandatory post-shinny beverages with your team, and boy does Great Lakes Brewery have the beer for that. Shinny Pants Session Stout, a beer inspired by Mr. Lackey's well-worn and well-stained pants.
Aw, man, you spilled beer on my shinny pants, bud.
Shinny Pants Session Stout. Drink it fresh, please.
It's time!
It's time for the Wrestling Observer Insider. With Dave Meltzer on Sunday night's main event.
Welcoming back to the program this week, the editor of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Dave Meltzer. We missed you last week, but you were doing something interesting. You told me a documentary filming, but it was some Dark Side of the Ring filming you were doing. Tell me about it.
Yeah, I can't really talk about too much about it, but I did film for two episodes, and I think that I'll probably be doing a third for the second season.
Now, are you allowed to release any of the topics? Because some seem to have been thrown out. Like,
I mean, I'll talk about any topic that's out. I mean, okay. I know the reality is that they're doing 14 episodes next season, and I'm going to guess I think four or five of them are out, and there might be one or two others that I know about, but most of them either I don't know or. I think there's probably about six that haven't been decided yet, believe it or not. And I mean, there's, there's so many different ideas that are batting about that you could do. So, it's not a shortage of topics yet. At some point, I mean, it will be, but right now I don't think that there's a shortage of topics.
No, and but, so far the ones that I've heard about, Brian Pillman and Collision in Korea, right?
Brian Pillman, Collision in Korea, the Smith family, Grizzly Smith and his family.
Right.
That's out. And I'm trying to think what other ones are out. I don't remember off the top of my head, but the Pillman one will probably be like the Owen Hart one.
Right.
You know what I mean? Where it's going to be the episode of the season that everyone talks about, I think. You know, that's my gut on it, and that's my gut on the positioning of it.
Well, you know, Jake, the Smith family, with his father being a wrestler, and then, you know, Rockin' Robin having and Sam Houston and Jake still being present in. I mean, Jake is such a cultural icon as well for being a part of the 80s. Like, that will also get them some press and notoriety, I would think.
Yeah, I think so. I think there'll be some interest in that one, too. Collision in Korea. I mean, and Collision in Korea is not the only overseas idea they've got. I mean, there's definitely ideas about Japan. I think that there's going to be at least one having to do with Japan. I'm not sure, but I know ideas from Japan have absolutely been talked about. The guys who are doing it are fans of Japanese wrestling.
Right.
So there may be, you know, something, you know, just different topics related to Japan. Some of them will be like where you have a Jake Roberts or a Brian Pillman where it's someone that's pretty mainstream for their time and everything. And others will be topics that, you would think, well, you know, somebody higher up would go, but what's the ratings in that? Who's going to know it? But, you know, I think one of the things that the last season showed is that, or the last two seasons really showed, is that there's some topics from people, and Gino Hernandez is one and David Schultz was another, of guys that you wouldn't, like, on paper, you're going to go, it's an interesting story, but who's going to watch? That did tremendous numbers. You know what I mean? Like, I think the Owen Hart numbers blew every single thing away, and the Benoit numbers were very strong. The Bruiser Brody. But, I mean, it was interesting to me, like Bruiser Brody and Gino Hernandez blew away Randy Savage and Moolah, and you would think that, you know, Randy Savage, as far as a name goes that everybody knows, you know what I mean? So I think that the topic usually outweighs the name value of the person, believe it or not.
Well, I mean, I'm very much looking forward to it. I love this series. Listeners of this show vote at their, you know, top associated wrestling series every week in our year-end award. So I look forward to seeing your face on there. That is great. Now, let's get into this story that may have taken a big turn this week. WWE releasing Zelina Vega 15 minutes before her release. She tweeted out, "I support unionization." This is all to do with the third-party social media, it seems.
It is.
What is the latest on this story with Zelina?
So this is the gist of it, okay? It's because it's an easy story in the sense of when I look back and everything, I kind of see that it's something that was an inevitable. And people kind of warned me about this when they banned a third party. It's like, you know, some of these women are making a lot of money in their third party, like real money, and they're not going to want to give it up. And there are some who make more from this than they do from their contract. And she was one of them, you know, who was making more money from Twitch than she makes with WWE. So under those circumstances, which one do you choose? And she chose the one she made the most money at, which was Twitch. So they had to fire her. She even opened up an OnlyFans account after they told people not to do it, because I think that she knew that that's the direction, and they had given everyone, you know, up until whatever date, and she wasn't going to give it up. And so they had to fire her. And then the question becomes, she's an independent contractor. Should they have the right to be able to do that when she's not an employee? And there you go. That's the big question, and that's where, you know, Gabriel Carteris, you know, wanted to find out what's going on, and Andrew Yang, who knows what's going on completely, and talks to people in WWE. I mean, as far as, like, talent, a lot of talent talks to him. Or I don't know a lot, but many. And so it's going to be an issue that goes forward as far as the independent contractor versus employee thing, because WWE talent, unlike the talent in pretty much every other U.S. company, they are employees. I mean, like AEW, it's close, but it isn't really, because they're allowed to work outside dates and they're allowed to do their outside projects. WWE, you are not. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's the whole difference. And then in, like, you know, in Ring of Honor and Impact, I mean, you can work outside dates. I mean, Ring of Honor, some people can't work outside dates in a certain geographical area, but they can still do outside dates. And no one's telling them they can't, you know, on their off days, make money using their name. So they are independent contractors. But with WWE, they are not. And so a lot of people are going, like, well, why only WWE? And it's like, WWE is the one where you can't work indies if you want to. You can't go to New Japan for January 4th Tokyo Dome if they give you a big offer and you work for WWE. With AEW, you can.
Right. What happens to Mr. Zelina Vega, Aleister Black?
He's an interesting case. Nothing's happening with him now, but I don't think that it relates to him. I don't think they're going to take reprisals on him right now. In 3 months, if she becomes an enemy, I mean, we've seen it. At that point, it becomes possible. I don't think they will.
Oh, Dave.
But I don't know about his. The thing with Aleister Black is more that with Paul Heyman out of power, he doesn't have anyone going to bat for him. And so he's, you know, we don't see him. He's one of those guys who's disappeared pretty much lately.
And I wouldn't be surprised if he remains disappeared because of this. I mean, you said if she becomes an enemy, I mean, tweeting out, "I support unionization," after being released, is putting her into the WWE enemy books.
And absolutely. If she doesn't want to be, but I think that there's an inevitability there. Or she may just shut. I presume she's going to shut up for 90 days and not say a word.
Right, right.
But what happens after that 90 days is up, I don't know, because I don't know her, you know. And I mean, it's, there'll be people pushing on both sides for her, and she's going to have to make a choice. And the other thing is that, like, and where does she go? Because she's going to go somewhere. She's not retiring from wrestling, and she's too good of a talker.
She's very good.
To not have a job.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no, I mean, and she's just another in a long line of WWE not really understanding how to use her, because her and Andrade could have been a dynamite combination. They were a great act in NXT.
They were great in NXT. They were good on the main roster, and then they decided to break them up for reasons that I could not even fathom. You know, it's like, you have this great act, and we've seen, how many times have we seen these really cool acts together, and they break them up just to break them up with, like, you know, Rusev and Aiden English, Rusev and Lana.
Tucker and Otis.
Tucker and Otis, Ricardo Rodriguez and Alberto Del Rio.
Yep.
You break them up to break them up with I mean, and you know when you break them up that they're both going to be weaker for it. And you do it anyway. And, yeah, I mean, look, poor Tucker. I mean, he's
he is.
And they shot, you know, that one is mind-boggling because they shot the angle and then they dropped it. And it's like, why did you even do it other than, you know, they just sat there and it's like, we got to get this briefcase off of Otis because we don't want him to lose, you know, in when he cashes in, because that's really bad for a babyface. And it's like, you know, maybe you could have figured that out 6 months ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Dave, before we get too far away from this story, though, I have referred to this earlier in the news as perhaps the Zelina Vega firing, that is, perhaps being, you know, Vince McMahon kicking down the first domino. Do you think, due to the change in power of the U.S. government, that is, you know, the election's done, and that's coming up in January, that there is the possibility here and a likelihood for this to become an actual issue beyond saying, that's wrestling, who cares?
I think it will become an issue. I don't know how big, but I think that there'll be at least, you know, a little bit. Yang will make it an issue. He's, you know, and he's been wanting to before, and this just adds fuel to the fire. And if SAG gets involved, that's actually even more, that becomes really interesting on a lot of levels. But yeah, I thought that the, you know, it's like WWE kind of had to, when you tell everyone you got to do something and someone absolutely defies you, you kind of have to let them go.
Right.
But, they're picking that fight at this point by making that demand. When they made that demand, we talked about it, you know, before.
Yeah.
Like if you make this demand, the timing of making this demand was the worst. You know, it's just like you're going to do it right before the election when your guy, you know, who will keep you out of trouble is going to be, you know, good chance he's going to be gone. He is gone now, so it's not even a good chance. And now you're doing a thing, because if it was just nothing and it was just one thing, but it is your entire independent contractor thing is a fraud. We all know it.
Yep.
You know, you've been in a, you know, number, you, for years you've been under the radar, and then you were protected, but now you are neither, and you already know it, because it's not like Yang is sitting there and, you know, secretive. He's making it public, and you're just going on business as usual. The timing of it was absolutely terrible for the WWE to be doing this, and that's the real issue that might, I mean, it's going to bite them to a degree. I don't know how big, but it's going to be an, it will be an issue next year. It's going to be a story.
Okay. As far as WWE's hiring tactics have gone, they seem to be out recruiting again. Reports have surfaced about WWE offering contracts at a lower rate. People like No Way Jose's name has come up. They are back signing, it seems, trying to keep people away from other organizations?
Well, they always are. You know, I mean, they've always wanted to, you know, I mean, they did cut a lot of people before, but, you know, now they're, you know, they cut back on the live event staff. So,
right.
Because they're probably not going back to live events, but they do want all the talent that they can, and they don't want the talent elsewhere. So, yeah, they want as many guys under contract as they can. They got more guys under contract than they can do anything with, but that's, you know, it's a defensive strategy. But everything they've been doing in the last 2 years has been a defensive strategy. I mean, like, you know, like when we talk about, like, NXT, I'll tell you what, like, and if they wanted to maximize NXT, the popularity of NXT, it would be a one-hour show, and it'd be on Monday night right after Raw, and it would have a million viewers every single week.
Right.
Because of the lead-in.
Yeah.
But they are more than happy with 600,000 viewers, because it cuts AEW from, it keeps AEW from topping a million every week. And that's what this, it's a defensive strategy.
Lots of reports out about SmackDown being absolute chaos this week. Vince
it
coming
is every
in.
Every week. But it's true, yeah.
Okay. This week, Drew McIntyre shows up. This just seems to be dead set on Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns at SmackDown, or is this just like a red herring they're throwing out to confuse people?
I think that it's a way to get people to think they're for sure changing the title tomorrow, and maybe they are, but that's, I mean, when I saw it, it was so obvious that I was thinking, like, it's essentially, it's a ratings ploy to go, like, you got to watch Raw Monday night because the title's changing hands, and maybe it will, you know, I mean, because, I mean, what match is more interesting, Roman Reigns and Orton or Roman Reigns and McIntyre? To me, because of the face heel dynamic, it's Roman Reigns and McIntyre. So it does make sense, you know. I mean, then when it's over, it's kind of like, well, why'd you change the title of Orton in the first place? But that's another issue. But, you know, again, when you're not thinking far in advance, that's these things happen. And maybe the other one is like, at least, you know, they'll probably get a good TV rating on Monday, and they need hot shots for TV ratings because, Raw, you know, Raw struggles right now. SmackDown's doing real good, though, but Raw's struggling, which is different from a couple months ago when SmackDown was so underperforming. But, you know, I mean, now they've got some hot acts that are, and some stories that are over.
Well, one of those stories that is over is the Seth Rollins, Rey Mysterio, Buddy Murphy story. But there's a lot of... So what's happening with Seth Rollins, though, and being Daddy Seth Rollins, taking some time off?
Yeah, he's going to be gone soon.
Okay.
But not for long. You know, like it might be a month or you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's... I mean, I was just told he's gone in September, and December. He's gone in December. Might be right after Survivor Series. That makes the most sense. Maybe it'll be the week after Survivor Series. But he's on the way out. That's why they rushed through and all of a sudden did this last match with Rey Mysterio out of nowhere with not even advertising it for a week, coming up on the day of the show. You know, but, you know, that's what happens when you're not planned in advance. But it's weird because that kind of takes the edge off of one of their hot... You know, their three big things are Roman Reigns, who has no opponent on the SmackDown side because they keep beating his opponents that are potential. So he's got nothing, but he's doing a great job. Then you've got the Sasha Banks-Bailey thing that they seem to have kind of transitioning into Sasha Banks-Carmella, which won't be as strong.
No,
and then you've got the Mysterio thing that without Seth, you really don't have it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, okay, now we're almost going to get back to, you know, the things that boosted that thing. They're all going to be gone for a while.
Well, unless they inject The Undertaker onto the show, because he's going to appear at Survivor Series. People contacted to show up and pay tribute to him. What do you know what the format or plan here is? He's been out of character a lot, but I feel as though if it's a pay-per-view, he'll be appearing in character.
Oh, I think he'll be in character, and it's kind of like your final thing, and they'll do some special effects. And I would presume he's going to choke slam some guys and things like that. I think he'll do something physical, and then, you know, maybe he'll take his gloves off or something like he's already done.
I think he's already done
that before.
Yeah, that's right.
But maybe I don't see him doing like this big, you know, farewell speech because the longer he talks, it's not a good thing.
True.
But I think that he may do a short one.
Yeah. And finally, Shaq and AEW. What is happening?
I don't know, but I certainly got the impression they're going to do something with Cody. And Shaq, which is, I mean, it's like they are at a certain thing where, you know, they have their base, and their base is it's stable, but no matter what they do, it's not really growing. It's just kind of stable.
Mm-hmm.
And Shaq is one of those things that will get the brand name out because the thing that they need, I think that their product is generally good. Their wrestling is really good. But the negative is that the brand name, it's not famous to the general public, and they need people to go, hey, there's this cool wrestling show on Wednesday night that are not really aware of it. And, you know, I mean, WWE was built, you know, as far as the national WWE came from Cyndi Lauper and Mr. T. And
then,
you know, they had the big comeback with Mike Tyson, which was the turning point. I wouldn't say the turning point, but a very significant turning point in the wrestling war. And WCW had tremendous success with Dennis Rodman and Karl Malone. So it's like that's one of those things that in the past it would work.
But Dave,
but it's not the past right now.
Yeah, and those names that you mentioned, for instance, especially Cyndi Lauper and Mr. T, they were white hot when WWE used
them.
Shaq and Mike Tyson in his first run, right?
Super drawing card, and he was still right. And Shaq is a name from the past.
Yes, that is my point here. I don't know if it's the right guy.
It's the guy they could get. I don't even know if there is a right guy. I mean, I guess you could say LeBron, and he is. LeBron would be, but they can't get LeBron. I mean,
I mean, Dave, if Drake showed up and cold cocked MJF for using his lyrics and not giving him credit, I think they'd have something.
That's true.
You know, but I do think it's got to be someone a little more contemporary. You deal with Shaq and you're dealing with people that remember Shaq. That's 90s. That's elapsed fans, I guess.
Yeah, but the other issue too is that the idea of a celebrity doing wrestling, it's not as big of a buzz as it was before. It really hit me when Tyson did AEW, and Tyson had been in the news a lot at that point.
You're right.
You know, from that video of him fighting and everything like that, or you know, whatever it was, you know, hitting the bag and everything. But it meant something. It did get them press, but it didn't get them as much press as I expected it would, and it didn't get them as much buzz. Like, I didn't see big ratings movements based on that I expected, and a lot of mainstream talk. And I think that Tyson was more contemporary that week because of the video going everywhere than Shaq is, even though Shaq's got the reality show on TNT, and, you know, he's a giant guy. So it's not the best person, but it's the most famous guy they can get right now, I guess, because we haven't seen anything of Tyson ever since he did the angle with Jericho, and obviously that was planned for the September pay-per-view and fell through.
Yeah, I guess that is no longer a thing. I mean, isn't TNT doing stuff with the XFL? Because that would be the guy that maybe would have people take notice of.
Oh, Dwayne?
Yeah, Dwayne.
Oh, yeah, but he's not going to do something against WWE. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah.
If he would, that would be the guy. But I cannot see him doing anything against WWE. That would be the coup. No, that would be if they could get him to do a program, that would actually be the game changer. That would put so many eyeballs on them, and Kenny Omega and Jericho and all those guys would benefit unbelievably from it. But I don't see that really being a possibility.
Yeah, I think we're living in fantasy land. Sorry to even bring that up. Okay, that was not reported here, friends. Don't go about saying that Agnew and Meltzer are reporting Dwayne Johnson and AEW. Dave, Hall of Fame is a lot of the talk of the Wrestling Observer. What do we have in the Observer this week and last week?
Yeah, so the Hall of Fame issue came out, Medico Assassino. I mean, some really great bios. And there'll be one more coming on Dan Kolov, which will be, it's a fascinating story about a completely different era and wrestling in Europe. But it's some really interesting stuff. But Medico Assassino, to me, he was a wrestler in the 50s in Mexico and Texas who was a phenomenal drawing card and one of the biggest. He was the second biggest star in Mexico for a long, long time. I mean, and that was in the, you know, behind Santo, ahead of Blue Demon, you know, and Blue Demon's like considered the number two legend. But he died very young due to cancer, and it's a very interesting career story. And Kenny Omega in, and Jun Akiyama in, and Carlo Flagarde is the other one who's in, who was a big, when I was a little kid, he was a big, big star in Mexico. You know, he's all over the magazines, and 13 years as world welterweight champion. So this is one of the two biggest issues of the year is the one that's out right now, you know, with the bios of the guys that are in and just all the balloting results and all that.
Well, it's all there at WrestlingObserver.com. And Dave, we're going to talk to you next week here, but we'll be live after the very strange Survivor Series card that we'll be watching next week. Sound good?
Yeah, great.
All right, we'll talk to you then.
Okay, have a great week.
You too. All right, we're going to take a break. My thanks to Dave Meltzer for dropping in. Coming up next, a tribute to Alex Trebek. It is a Jeopardy-style edition of Turnbuckle Trivia, and then Joe Aguinaldo joins me for the rest of the show after that. Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio.
If you like Dave Meltzer interview segments, you'll love WrestlingObserver.com. WrestlingObserver.com is your place for the latest pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. subscribers have access to hundreds of back issues of Dave's Wrestling Observer newsletter, plus daily podcasts, including a library of over 9,000 shows dating back to 2005. Check it out today, WrestlingObserver.com.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville realised that some big pizza conglomerates want to make the cheapest pizza. Some want to be the fastest. At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone-baked, the traditional Italian way. It's what we strive for every day, to be the best, not the fastest or the cheapest. Oh, cue the announcer.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
Congrats to Stephen Baker, who won our Pizzaville $25 giveaway last week. This week, if you want to be a winner, here is your challenge. Send out a tweet and name a pizza after a wrestler and tell me what toppings should be on it. Once again, what would an Undertaker pizza be? How about a Flair pizza? Tell me the wrestler, tell me the toppings, tag at SNME Radio and tag at Pizzaville, and I'll be selecting a winner for another $25 Pizzaville gift card tomorrow at noon.
It's time for everyone's favorite game show.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what.
Go one-on-one and get it done. Sunday night's main event presents...
Everybody hands go up!
Turnbuckle Trivia.
And they stay there! And they say yeah! And they stay there!
It is Turnbuckle Trivia time here on Sunday night's main event, and this Turnbuckle Trivia will be a little bit different. Remembering Alex Trebek, a great Canadian who passed away last Sunday due to pancreatic cancer, of course, the host of Jeopardy. Well, we're going to pay him tribute here, where our two combatants today will have to answer in the form of a question. Now, those people are, first of all, we're going out to the East Coast to Nova Scotia, and Brad the Dad is on the line. Good morning, Brad.
Hey, Jason, how are you?
Doing all right. You're player today. You might have well just been saying how are you to him, because it's Jason from Louisville. Hello, Jason.
How's it going?
I'm doing very well. All right, guys, here we go. Our Jeopardy-style game, 5 questions each. Whoever does better gets the win. Remember, you must answer in the form of a question, and whoever does better lands a T-shirt from ballergear.ca. Brad, you are up first. Randy Savage's... Oh, by the way, today would have been Randy Savage's 68th birthday. So we're doing Randy Savage Jeopardy trivia. A lot of memories here. Brad, Randy Savage's brother.
Who is Lanny Poffo?
That is correct. Very good, Brad. Jason, to you for your first answer. Randy Savage's father.
I know that. It's, who is...
Oh, you're buzzed out time-wise.
Anthony Poffo?
It is Angelo Poffo. Angelo Poffo, yes. All right, buzzed out time-wise there. Okay, back to you, Brad. Randy Savage defeated him to win the Intercontinental Championship.
Who is Ricky the Dragon Steamboat?
That is incorrect, Brad. Remember, Ricky beat Randy... Randy beat Tito Santana. The answer, who is Tito Santana? Now that opens the door here, Jason, for you. Randy Savage made his first WrestleMania appearance against him.
Who is Ricky Steamboat? I don't think that's right, though.
That is incorrect. Ricky Steamboat was WrestleMania 3. WrestleMania 2 was Randy's first appearance, and the answer is who is George the Animal Steele?
Mm-hmm.
All right, to you now. Brad, the Macho King was crowned in September of 1989 by defeating this man.
Who is Ricky the Dragon Steamboat?
No, that is incorrect. Right. It is who is Hacksaw Jim Duggan. That is how the crown was passed. Jason, to you, let's get into this. Your answer is... Macho Man defeated him to start his second WWF title reign.
Who is Ultimate Warrior?
That is incorrect. The correct answer is, who is Ric Flair? All right, Brad, back to you. Here we go. Randy Savage's second reign would come to an end on September 1st, 1992, by this man.
Who is Sergeant Slaughter?
That is incorrect. The correct answer, like the last one, who is Ric Flair?
That's right.
Next up, Jason. He supposedly retired the Macho Man at WrestleMania 8.
Who is Rick Rude?
Oh, Jason, you had the answer in your last one. It is who is the Ultimate Warrior. It was a retirement match. Guys, Brad, you're still up 1-0. That means if you get this, you get the win. Randy Savage played this character in the 2003 Spider-Man film.
Who is Bonesaw McGraw?
And that is the second answer that you've had correct, or the second question you've had correct, that is, and that gets you the mathematical win. Congratulations, Brad the Dad. We're going to be sending out another shirt, because we did it last week, to the East Coast Dads. Brad, you got this one. Jason, thank you very much for playing the game, pal.
Thanks a lot.
You know, that was pretty similar to me watching Jeopardy. A whole bunch of incorrect answers, but congratulations. Brad's got a t-shirt. And remember, Alex Trebek was a part of professional wrestling history as well, appearing at WrestleMania 7 as a backstage interviewer. Remember, guys, everything relates to pro wrestling. So here is a little bit of Alex Trebek interviewing Jake the Snake Roberts at WrestleMania 7 as we go to break. Remember, a whole nother hour to come. So stick with us, and now a little bit of Jake the Snake and Alex Trebek.
I'm here now in the dressing room with Jake Roberts and...
Damien,
thank you.
Why are you so nervous, my man?
Well, I'll tell you the truth, snakes do make me nervous. As a matter of fact, Jake, even when we have them as a category on the show, I get a little scared. I'm not too comfortable with them.
There's nothing to be afraid of. Damien's a big fan. Oh, he really? Watches your show all the time. In fact, Reptiles of the World is his favorite category.
Why is he bending his head like
that? I think he wants to ask you if he can be a contestant. Go ahead, Damien, ask him.
I'm out of here.
Well, Damien, I guess you just have to settle for the home version of Jeopardy, won't you?
I'm Manny Arsenault, and I'm with Baller Gear.
Hi, I'm Chad Jeter, and I'm with Baller Gear.
I'm Ricky Collins Jr., and I'm with Baller Gear.
Baller Gear is the official home for the CG brand, 39 Sack, Root Demons, Shaq One, Manny Show, Front Happy Collections, and more. We're also the newest home for the official tees from SNME Radio. Check out the selection of tees today at ballergear.ca.
I'm Dan the Mouth of Ransky.
And I'm Joe Aguinaldo.
And we are the old folks, two burnout wrestling fans that have been watching it since the 70s.
But now, All Elite Wrestling is here to make everything old new again.
So what better idea for a podcast to have it covered by two old crusty parts?
It's called All Elite Weekly, and you can listen to it by becoming a patron of Sunday Night's Main Event at patreon.com/SNME Radio.
And you can bet we'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly, because we're the old folks. Tough guy!
And I think I know exactly what we need to do.
Yeah, yeah, the voice of reason right here. Riddle, what do you got?
Sick code names. AJ, you're the skipper. Braun, you're a mongoose. Keith, happy birthday, Keith. And Bro Lee, you get it.
That's actually sick.
And,
I like that.
And Sheamus, this was tough. But your Survivor Series team name is Fireface. Oh, ain't that some
drums came in, you ain't see that coming. Welcome back to Sunday Night's Main Event. Joining me now on the line, one of the hosts of our patron podcast, All Elite Weekly, Joe Aguinaldo is here. Hello, Joe.
What is up, Jason?
Joe, you are a shine of bright and positive light on this show. I would say out of the five hosts, you are the one who always sees the positive, and you messaged me on Tuesday after I said, hey, Joe, don't forget, you got to watch Raw because you're co-hosting with me this week, and you said, Jay, I'm going to do my best to find something positive, so I'm holding you to that, Joe. I watch Raw every week in detail, make notes. It is a tough watch. What is positive?
Okay, Riddle and Sick Code Names, I thought was hilarious. That was great. Okay, now this is actually not going to make sense to you guys, but I'm going to put it out there. That R-Truth seven-way match, for what it was and what it was supposed to be, I thought it was great. I laughed. I was entertained. And it also proved that the roll-up slash small package is truly, truly the most dangerous hold in pro wrestling.
I tell you, between you and Andrada, your love for R-Truth and these segments, it's kind of sad to watch that because, you know, the first thing that I think of in that match is not the comedy of R-Truth and what they're doing with 24/7 in the championship, but it's rather thinking about Tucker standing there in the corner, a guy who had a tag team with Otis that clearly had more room on the track to run and be successful. They've broken him up, and now he's competing for the 24/7 title. I'm not saying Tucker's a superstar, but what I am saying is that is a huge waste.
No, you know what? All joking aside, it is sort of sad to see the Tucker and Otis thing, because I agree with you. I thought they had some gas left in the tank with that tag team. And, you know, like, just to jump really quickly, I'm going to fast forward to, like, SmackDown real quick. So you got Otis kind of feuding with Dolph and Bobby Roode. And so it's like, well, there's a tag team. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. there's a potential, you know, program for those that team that could have been if they hadn't broken them up. So, coming back to Raw, again, I did dig the R-Truth. I thought, the seven-way match. I thought that was funny. Also, like, at least from a wrestling perspective, I really liked Ricochet versus Ali. I thought that was a great match.
I figured that you would say that. You know, the issue there with that is you can have a match with two great performers, and they did give them almost 15 minutes of time, which is lovely. But in my opinion, and Mark and I have talked about this on the weekly podcast, Ricochet deserves to be a part of Revolution. He's an ideal member for numerous reasons. Number one, his name is perfect for, you know, Retribution. And along with that, he is the epitome of what Retribution says they are. They take guys who have been misused in WWE and are supposed to be building this group to rage against the machine or whatever. And Ricochet has been completely misused. So he and Ali, you know, should very well be on the same side. Why is Ali going after Ricochet? Tell me that.
Okay, so like I said, it was a good match, but 100% agree with you. I think the story on Ricochet is it, like, if this ends up with Ricochet joining Retribution, it makes sense. But like the story, even the match itself, there were things that Ali was saying where, like, he said something along the lines of, like, you know, not like, you know, one man can't change the world, but then in like the next breath he says, I'm going to change the world. It's like, okay, which one is it? Because you're contradicting yourself. Like, it didn't make sense. And, you know, the other thing that really bugged me about this match, too, is, like, you know, Ricochet has a chance to win, beat Ali, and instead of going for his, you know, big move off the top rope, he jumps off the rope at the rest of Retribution.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, the dumb babyface trope is alive and well in the WWE. So, again, I'm trying to be the positive guy. Match was great. And if I look at it as just a wrestling match, no problems. But when I look at it from the overall perspective of the story and what they're trying to do, yeah, I was kind of shaking my head at this one.
One of the more curious storylines that I'm intrigued by, and I'll leave it at the level of intrigued, not interested, but intrigued, is the way Drew McIntyre and Sheamus are associating with one another backstage. Their interactions are friendly. They talk about their history together, and that's legit. Like, these guys knew each other before their WWE time. They've never really been partnered together in WWE. They've never been a tag team. Do you feel as though, because the interesting thing here is one is a heel, one is a babyface, and one is the biggest babyface on the brand, Drew McIntyre. Do you believe that perhaps they have a future as a tag team, or will this immediately spin into a feud and that is what they're putting the tease in for now?
I would like yourself, I am very intrigued by this. I like the idea of, you know, having quote unquote the heel and a baby face who are friends, and, you know, they're kind of potentially joining up. So I like the idea of the tag team leading to a feud, but whenever I see those two backstage, that's the most interested in Sheamus that I've been in a while. Yeah. Like, so when he's wrestling against, say, you know, in that three-way match when he was wrestling like Keith Lee in the tag match. And so it was like Sheamus and Braun Strowman versus Keith Lee and Matt Riddle, fine, whatever. Right. But backstage, he actually shows some personality. He's actually interesting. So yeah, I'm certainly, again, I think intrigued is the right word with where they're going. But personally, I would hope that they would go first with the tag team, kind of give Sheamus a little bit of that. Maybe he's turning into a good guy after all, and then he just quashes Drew somewhere, and then they have like a blood feud.
Yeah, they could have a very interesting run, even if they did pop the tag team titles onto them, which is not an awful idea. And you face off Drew McIntyre and Sheamus versus the New Day that are on that brand, and Sheamus wins by cheating. Drew doesn't realize it, goes along with it, is happy to have the title. Now, this is all going to depend about what happens in Drew's future because, obviously, as we saw on SmackDown this week, clearly they have bigger plans. But that's an interesting storyline to me. However, Joe, when it does make its way to a feud, are you interested in seeing Drew McIntyre and Sheamus square off?
I'll admit, I am a Drew McIntyre fan, so I would probably, yes, be interested in it. And Sheamus, it's really weird with Sheamus, man. I'm hot and cold on that guy because sometimes I'm like, oh, God, get this guy off my TV. And then there's other times where I'm like, you know what? No, he's somewhat interesting. So, I'm going to go back to your word, intrigued. I would be very intrigued to see this, this story play out.
One of the main issues I have right now watching Raw and SmackDown is the fact that we're moving towards Survivor Series. It's a week away, and every angle is the same. Number one, every angle that is normally on these shows has pretty much been put on hold for infighting. Every team of the four teams, the two Raw, the two SmackDown teams, which are in the elimination match, it's the same storyline. Hey, can this team be a cohesive unit? Can this team get along? It's making for extremely repetitive programming.
Yeah, like for the last couple weeks, absolutely it has.
Yeah, so I feel as though Survivor Series, which used to be, it's still supposedly one of the major four, at this point, due to the way it's been booked, it's detrimental to the WWE. It doesn't forward any storylines.
Yeah, like you know, it's just really strange to watch Raw. And again, I'm going to come back to what we were just talking about. Like the last two or three weeks, it's like, okay, who's going to be on the team? And then you're like, all right, you know that this guy and this guy and this guy aren't going to get along, or this girl and this girl and this girl aren't going to get along. And if like that's the focus of the television, but it's kind of hurting sort of the longer term stories, right?
Does. Yeah.
And that's my issue with this whole thing. Like, I'm not going to say I'm not interested to see how, let's say, Team Raw, interacts with each other at Survivor Series. Sure, you know, like I've been watching Survivor Series forever. Cool. But it's like, okay, so after this Survivor Series thing, where are we going? Because that's the problem, is I don't know where we're going after this. And like the only storyline that seems to be kind of consistent is this, you know, this Drew versus Orton thing. And that's been, well, that's taken forever, you know? I'm not keen on this booking, with the Survivor Series stuff. And here's the other part that really bothers me. It's like last year, the build to Survivor Series was actually really good with the inclusion of NXT.
Yep.
So they can build storylines around Survivor Series that are compelling and they're really good. They did it last year. Why can't they do it this year?
Yeah, they're definitely not. I mean, if you look at the storylines they have, and I want to get your take on this before we have to take a break. Lana going through the table again. Have you had enough, Joe? Because I liked this initially, and this week to me was, last week I think was the real tipping point when they just spotlighted all the time she's gone through the table. But I predicted right when this started, Lana's the lone survivor in this match.
I 100%, man. I haven't really been a huge fan of the Lana going through a table thing. And I think maybe it's because, you know, I part of me is wondering, you know, kind of like in like the quote unquote inside, you know, is this punishment for this whole Miro thing? And if it is, I think that's kind of petty. Again, I don't know if it is or not. I'm just saying. But like, yeah, when they went through like, you know, number one, she went through a table, and yeah, number two, yeah, and then it got to seven. And I'm like, okay, enough's enough with this already. And yeah, I agree. I think I'm not going to say she's going to be the sole survivor, but if she did win and she was the sole survivor, I mean, it would make sense with the story that they've been telling over the last, you know, whatever it's been, couple months, that Lana's sort of getting beat up. She's getting killed by Nia Jax, and she should be the one to win that feud. But again, where do we go from there?
Well, I think where we go from there is eventually, and I don't know how they're going to make this work, Lana has to put Nia through a table.
Yes. It's like, okay, great. But again, that's going to be interesting to see, to say the least.
We are going to take a break when we come back. Remember, we were just talking about Survivor Series. That is the only time Raw performers face SmackDown performers, unless you watch SmackDown this week and then you saw it. We'll talk about that ridiculousness next right here. You are listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. Turning tables. That does it for this week's free version of Sunday Night's Main Event. I thank you all for listening. Do keep in mind, there is a version of this show that is commercial free and extended and is posted on Sunday afternoons. And it's available at patreon.com/SNMEradio. It's only $1 a week. You get this show, as I mentioned, commercial free and extended. You also get the midweek markout that I do with Mark Andrada. You get All Elite Weekly with Dan Lavransky and Joe Aguinaldo. And you get all of the episodes of our new Patron Pod contest as well. So we've talked about all those things on the show. Now become a part of those things by signing up for $1 a week at patreon.com/SNMEradio.